This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North convenience stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays.
I've always enjoyed it. It's whether I'm working out or even watching film. And shoot, man, you obviously, I respect the work you put in. I can tell you study the game, and the guys that you have on and the people that you have on are people that are working at it. I respect and appreciate that.
I think a lot of people are going to talk about culture and about how you change culture. And I think that people believe in order to do that, you have to find one of these like hardo football dudes that is a Dan Campbell or a Jim Harbaugh. But I've started to ask a lot of people about this just because I'm interested in the idea of what culture means in an NFL building. And I was in LA a couple of weeks ago talking to a bunch of guys on the Chargers about this. And when I was asking them about what football culture meant, none of them mentioned like being somebody who can give a rousing speech at the front of a locker room. No one talked about, you know, how hard practices were. One of the words that came out of everybody's mouth was honesty.
Yeah, I think that it's fair. Robert Mays' description of football culture, football character, that is one of the things that matters to players a lot, is being honest about where things stand, about where they stand.
Like, yeah,
it's
man.
It's funny. Football players are pretty adaptable. At least in my experience, they just want to know what they need to do to get better. And they'll work at getting better. They just want to be told the truth. They just want to be given an opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's true. And they want to know that you'll look in the mirror just like they have to every single day. I mean, those Caleb Williams words in the Esquire article that came out earlier today about what happened after the Hail Mary, you know, and how annoyed and disappointed the locker room was at Matt Eberflus not taking accountability. We saw it happen in real time. That's how you lose a room. And that doesn't matter what kind of personality you are, whether you're a football hardo in Robert Mays' words or not.
Losing the room as a coach, it's hard to come back from that. I wonder if Matt Eberflus will ever get a head coaching job again at the professional level because of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, like, I don't think that he will. I think that he got exposed as being one of those guys who is a solid defensive coordinator and will go back to being that. But all the time he was here, he looked like a defensive coordinator impersonating a head coach. And I don't think those guys get second chances.
The Athletic Football Show is must listen if you are a football fan. Robert Mays does an incredible job with it. The whole crew at the Athletic Football Show is outstanding. We're lucky to have Robert here with us, joining us on the Circa Sports Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Robert, thanks for joining us. We've had a really robust conversation over the last couple of days on the type of role Ben Johnson might have to assume as a head coach versus him as an offensive coordinator, where maybe he could have been a little bit more good guy to Dan Campbell playing bad guy. But now It's his show. So I'd love to know from your perspective, how do you expect Ben Johnson to kind of deploy the way that he teaches this offense and the standard that he wants to set?
Based on everything I know about Ben Johnson and how he operated in Detroit, I think there's a pretty high and exacting standard for how you have to perform in his offense. And so I think that we get discipline. We get it mixed up when it comes to the NFL and we point NFL players. I don't think you need to be a barker or a yeller. I think you need to be somebody who sets a standard for accountability. And I think that honesty and making sure people meet that standard, that's all you need to do as an NFL head coach. And so I don't think you necessarily need to be some hard-o disciplinarian in that role. I think you just need to make people understand this is how you have to operate. This is the standard that we're going to meet in this building. And I'm going to be honest with you if you're not meeting that standard. And I think that he has the capacity to do that based on how I've heard about pretty much how he operated and how things went in Detroit.
Do you have a feel for JT Barrett as a voice? You know, do you have any feel for him yet in terms of, because a lot of times it's a combo with the head coach and the quarterback coach, or the OC and the quarterback coach. It'll be interesting to see how that mix develops.
I really don't. You know, I know that JT obviously was on that staff in Detroit. I think that I have a lot of faith in the people they hired on that Detroit staff. If you look at what they did over those 3 or 4 years that Dan Campbell was there, you know, and it wasn't just, what was most impressive to me is it wasn't just the initial hires, which were obviously good. You know, Aaron Glenn is now a head coach and was on that staff in a, you know, smaller role, but it was how fast they were willing to turn over the coaching staff when they thought they needed to. You know, that goes back to moving on from Anthony Lynn in year one and giving the reins to Ben Johnson with Dan Campbell kind of in tandem. But if you look at what they did on their defensive staff last year, you know, Terrell Williams, who is now the defensive coordinator for the Patriots, he was not on that staff 2 years ago. They brought him over from Tennessee. And I believe Deshae Townsend was their passing game coordinator. And he replaced the DB's coach on a previous staff in Detroit. And you really saw the level of play in the defensive backfield take a step up for the Lions last year. So I just think that they did a very good job of vetting and understanding their coaching staff. If you were good enough for that staff, I have a pretty good feeling that you're good enough for another staff based on how they ran things in Detroit.
Robert, we haven't had a chance to talk to you since the Bears have finished their first part of the offseason. What have you thought of what they've done?
You know, I think that it all makes sense when you look at the moves in totality. I think that there are some that were a little bit expensive, and we'll see how it goes. You know, a guy like Grady Jarrett, who's, you know, getting deeper into his 30s, third contracts, fourth contracts for those sorts of players, those can be dicey, but that's kind of how the market was for players at that position and that age this year. Jonathan Allen got paid, Javon Hargrave got paid. I think that it's really an indication that, one, it was not a strong edge class among the defense, among the free agents. You really had Josh Sweat, Khalil Mack, Odangbo. I mean, that was really it. Even guys like Joey Bosa had some warts. So I think when teams were looking for pass rush help, a lot of the teams that needed it on the edge or at defensive tackle. And I think that pushed up the market for those guys a little bit. I think that one could look dicey in a couple of years. Odangbo's a projection. You know, there weren't that many guys in this free agent class who were rookie contract players who you would theoretically be paying for your prime. I mean, you could count them on one hand. A lot of the best free agents in this class were third contract players, every single one of the corners, a decent amount of the edge rushers. So you're paying him a lot of money. The hope is that his best football is in front of him. It'd be hard to say that about a lot of the other free agents in this class. On the offensive side of the ball, you understand what they're doing. They paid a price to do it. John Jackson for $17.5 million against the cap and Joe Tooney for, I think, you know, $15-18 million against the cap. It's a lot of money to pay for an aging guard and a guard who has a really big injury history. But clearly they had an urgency to fix those spots. I mean, I think they looked at what happened last year and said, we might have to pay a premium to make sure that never happens again. And again, if you look at the free agent guards available, just guys you could sign on the market, there really weren't that many players. I mean, you had Will Fries, and that was really about it. You know, Tevin Jenkins was not that far down that list, and I'm not sure Bears fans would have been thrilled with that. So I think overall, they paid a premium, but they addressed the spots that they needed to address.
What it did, what all those moves did, and that's excellently described, is it really opened up the draft for possibilities, didn't it? Lawrence, when you and I went through the positions, I think we had six maybe even seven positions that we would be comfortable with them taking with their first pick, whether they drafted, moved down or not. Like, do you have a similar comfort level with what position they go to because of how they're set up at this point?
I kind of do, yeah. I think that you can go a bunch of different directions because you've checked a lot of boxes when it comes to need. I said this to our draft analyst, Dane Brugler at The Athletic, who does a phenomenal job. If you guys have not read Dane's work at The Athletic, he's the standard in the industry. His draft guide dropped this week. You should go check it out. But I said to him this week when we were talking about Bears' potential paths, we were talking about Bears' potential paths at 10, and I said, you know what I honestly think could swing where they go at 10? Is how much they believe in Kieran Menigie. If they really do think that he is a potential long-term answer at left tackle and is a viable swing tackle this year, I think that allows you to bypass one of the tackles if they're there at 10. If you don't feel that way, then I think you're more inclined to potentially take one of the tackles, because what that would do for you, let's say you took Will Campbell at 10 and you thought you could play him as guard depth this year and then he could step in for Braxton Jones next spring if you didn't want to re-sign Braxton Jones. That plan is really good if you don't feel good about Menigie. If you think that he is somebody you can develop over the next couple of years, then maybe you're less inclined to take one of the tackles. Then if you want to take Jentzy at 10, okay. If you want to trade down and take a defensive tackle, okay. If you want to take one of the tight ends, you know, if you think that Cole Kmet's somebody that doesn't have a lot of guaranteed money left after this year, the Lions spent about 35% of their plays in two tight end sets last year. If you think Loveland or Warren in that spot is your best answer because even though you have Zacchaeus, you would like a third receiving option to go along with those two receivers, I can understand the rationale for that. So I think there's just a lot of paths that you can talk yourselves into based on the current makeup of the roster.
I think that makes a lot of sense. The tight end is really interesting to me for the reasons you talked about. But, you know, I know you just did a deep dive on edge rushers, and I'm fixated there. Also, because of the free agent situation, there weren't a lot of great edges, and we know that Odengbo is a bit of a projection. So who do you love among these edge rushers if there were to get one between 10 and 15 or 17, if they trade down a little bit? Who do you really, really like in that realm?
None of them. I really don't. I think all of them have at least some concerns. You know, with Shamar Stewart, you know, he looks like Miles Garrett. You know, he looks like Superman. That's not how he produced in college. And, you know, we had a really good conversation on our show this week about Shamar Stewart specifically. You know, Dane loves Shamar Stewart. He's his 9th overall player. He believes in the traits. You know, he saw him up close and personal at the Senior Bowl. He believes that he has the bend and the flexibility to kind of unlock some of those physical gifts as he gets deeper into his career. We had Fran Duffy from the All City Network on that show, and Fran has Shamar Stewart as his 61st ranked player. He just doesn't see it. He had 4.5 sacks in college. You know, you can have as many physical tools as you want. If you don't know how to put them all together, does it really matter? So I think that both of those arguments, I can understand it. It's a toss-up. A guy like Mikel Williams, he was hurt this year, and I think that was a reason that he maybe didn't play up to the level people thought he was going to. You know, when I watch him, I see a guy that reminds me of Greg Rousseau, who is a good but not great player for the Bills. I think he's a high floor guy. I think he's going to be able to defend the run well. I'm not sure what his ceiling ever looks like as a pass rusher. Even though he's a big, long guy, he's not a violent player in my mind. He's more of like a finesse slasher. Are you comfortable taking that guy at 10? If you think his best case scenario is to be your number two rusher one day, that's a conversation you have to have with yourself. And Mike Green, I just don't think he's going to check the physical boxes that Dennis Allen wants. I would encourage people to go to Mock Draftable. Is a very good site to do this. It's mockdraftable.com. You can sort the last 20 years of combine data by whatever test it was. Go sort by arm length, the longest arms to the shortest arms, and look at how many Saints drafted over the last like 8 years are up near the top of that list in arm length. He wants big, big defensive ends. Mikel Williams and Shamar Stewart fit that. Mike Green does it. So even if he might be the best pass rusher of all of those guys, he's got off-field concerns, he's got size concerns potentially, and he played at Marshall the entire year. So I don't think there's a single edge rusher available in that range where you can just say, I feel really, really good about this.
What else do you think we should know about Dennis Allen as a defensive coordinator?
He's the best. He's the best. I love watching his defenses play. It's one of those defenses where, you know, I think that Matt Eberflus did a solid job as the Bears defensive coordinator. But I think with a lot of these four down zone heavy guys, you know, there isn't a level of kind of in your face urgency where they're pressing the issue. And when you watch those Saints teams play, you know, they're a four down front, but they're a little bit more multiple than that. They're going to run some more like funky simulated pressures every once in a while. And the way that they play their quarters and man coverage, they're in your face. That is how it's going to be. They are going to challenge you the entire game. And so I just think that it's a perfect fit because it allows you to maintain your personnel that you've gone out and acquired because it fits a four down defense, but it just is a more dynamic sort of defense than the one that we've seen over the last couple of years. I mean, I truly think you could make a solid argument that Dennis Allen has been the best pure defensive coordinator in the NFL over the last 5 years. As excited as I am about Ben Johnson, the fact that they managed to pull that off, I think is something for Bears fans to be really, really happy about.
Man, that's exciting stuff. And we've been talking about how he's going to use some of this talent. Jalen Johnson is excited. He's going to get to travel, it seems, with a number one wide receiver. I wonder how Tyreek Stevenson fares in Dennis Allen's mind, Robert.
He's had a lot of defensive backs play really well in that defense over a long period of time. And it's funny because I think that there are some people in Chicago that have written off Tyreek Stevenson. You know, they think that he's a lost cause, corner is a need for this team. I would caution people against that for right now. Corner is the most volatile position in the NFL. When you look at year-to-year performance, it's really hard to maintain a high standard of play at that position year over year after year. You know, very few guys do it. Sauce Gardner had a down year this year. He's about to make $25 million a year. So I think the fact that Tyreek Stevenson, year two slump, and just the natural volatility at that position, I would not be surprised if Tyreek Stevenson had a big year this year, if he made good on some of the flashes that we saw from him as a rookie.
Robert, you talk to so many coaches around the NFL. I would love to know what you've learned about the danger of the coordinator making the jump to head coach. What are things that Ben Johnson should be careful of as he makes that transition?
It's just a matter of understanding where you have to now split your time. You know, you can't be somebody who is just coming up with a game plan all the time. You're not just a ball plays guy anymore. And I think you have to make sure that you're building your staff in the right way to take the right things off of your plate. And going out and getting a guy like Declan Doyle, this is going to be something we see from some of these play calling head coaches on offense, these young guys that they can bring in. And I think it's for a few different reasons. One, these guys are fluent in technology. Like, they're able to use so many of the tools at their disposal for research, for game planning, for understanding how to put together a game plan, how to teach the offense. There's just an intimate knowledge of that kind of stuff for younger coaches that I think allows them to handle a lot of grunt work as somebody in that position. The offensive coordinator for a play calling head coach is an administrative position. It's an organization position. And I think going out and getting a guy with that skill set is not surprising. And I don't know, Lawrence, how much more time did you have on your hands when you were 28 years old? I think I had a lot more than I do right now. So I think having a guy where your purview can be like all ball all the time, I think that makes a lot of sense. So I think making sure you're taking the right stuff off your plate and making sure you're organizing things in the right way is part of it. And then I think it's about knowing that you have to connect with every single player on the roster. You know, it's not just about the guys in your room. It's about making sure that, again, you're setting a standard across the entire building. And I, based on some of the stuff I heard at the Combine about Ben Johnson and the way that he was thinking about some of the requirements and the duties of being a head coach, I was really impressed with some of the things that I heard from assistants, both on the Bears staff and not on the Bears staff. He is somebody I think that gets it. If this fails, it failed in the right way. I've said that a million times this offseason, and I'm going to continue to say it. I think that this is the correct bet. This is the correct person for the organization in the moment that it's currently in.
Robert, your description of the offensive coordinator as an administrative position is just awesome. I was thinking about, I think I made the comp, Lawrence, like, you know, in a band, sometimes the lead guitar player gets to hire a student to go ahead and take care of all the rhythm stuff and some of the basic grunt work that needs to happen. Robert, before we let you go, can you profess your love for Derek Harmon, who seems to be your favorite player in this draft, the Michigan State Spartan and now an Oregon Duck? Why do you love Derek Harmon?
I turned on the tape and, you know, he was the most productive interior pass rusher in college football last year. I believe he had like something like 55 pressures per PFF. He was a very disruptive player. And so I expected to turn on the tape for a guy who was, you know, 6'5", 315, that was, you know, twitchy, a slasher, things like that. And that's not the guy I saw. He was sturdy against the run. He took on double teams. You know, Kenneth Grant is another defensive tackle from Michigan that I think has a chance to get drafted pretty high in this draft. And Kenneth Grant played at, you know, 335, 340. And I think that Derek Harmon holds up better against double teams and as an anchor against the run than a guy like Kenneth Grant does. And then you combine that with the pass rushing productivity, he's a player that I just think makes your entire defense better immediately. He's going to keep guys off of your linebackers. He's going to create his own pass rush productivity. If you use him in stunts, you know, he creates space for other people. He can loop around. He has the explosion to do that. He missed some tackles this year. You know, there were a lot of near misses, but I think a lot of those near misses are a product of him just being around the ball. And the one thing with him, and I think this has been a concern at Michigan State and it's something to watch, is that he's had some weight fluctuations. It's been up and down, and that was a problem at Michigan State. He dropped weight, went to Oregon, and was significantly more productive. If he can keep the weight down, and this is a scenario where being a professional athlete, where you're concentrating on your body every single day, is a benefit for him rather than the money slowing him down a little bit, I think he has the makings of like a 10-year starter in the NFL. I don't know if he'll ever be an all-pro, but I think he is a player that makes your defense better if he makes good on the potential that he seems to have.
Robert, thanks so much for the time, man. We appreciate it. We always love it when you're on the show.
Anytime, guys. Good to talk to you.
That's Robert Mays from The Athletic. I was talking to some people inside of Twitch. For guys that, for people that don't have it, who didn't play football, I think it's Robert Mays and Mina Kimes. I don't think anyone's better than those two.
As the best football talkers who didn't play football?
Yeah. I think he's amazing. And the thing is that, yeah, there are other people inside of, like, the draft complex that I like. But I'm talking about...
Everything.
Can move in all of the spaces.
Yeah.
To me, it's Robert Mays and Mina Kimes. Like, those are the two people that I go, wow. Like, their level of expertise on something that they didn't play at the professional level is impressive in a way that evokes envy. Like, they're so good. They're so good, you want to be better.
Well, yeah, you, it's true. I definitely like to rise to the conversation when we have Robert Mays, for sure. And I thought the stuff on Dennis Allen was just awesome.
Oh, we're going to have a ball with that next week.
Yes, we are.
We're going to have a ball with having that discussion.
Because that guy was a bad head coach, but hot damn, as a defensive coordinator, and the way that he described all of the utility of the players.
The thing that I liked about his answer on that question was that he got giddy. He's like, he's the best.
Yeah.
Like, that should be really exciting for Bears fans to hear Robert talk like in those terms, because he also doesn't suffer from hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so him bringing that up is significant. That's a great job by Shane to get Robert to come and hang out with us for a little bit.
We got to get to some Cubs, man. There's a bunch of Cubs stuff percolating. There's a schedule issue you want to talk about.
The Justin Steele thing.
Oh yeah, the Justin Steele thing. And the best hitter in the game is talking about his two-strike approach, and it makes me think of one of the struggling young Cubs as well. So let's do all of that, shall
we? Let's talk some Cubs as they get ready for their series against the Dodgers, which you will be able to hear every single game right here on The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Yeah, you know, we call today Feel Good Friday, so I'm trying to stick to that, you know?
I like it.
Afternoons on the Score.
They've half become the New York Yankees of baseball.
The New York Yankees of baseball included Juan Soto. Lawrence, you did me the solid of bringing the Tom House interview from Pablo Torre yesterday to the radio show. Let me bring you the article on MLB.com about Juan Soto's two-strike approach.
Oh, I like this.
Dude, it is such good stuff. At age 17 in the Nationals system, their hitting coordinator came down and said, you need a two-strike approach. And he says he completely took it to heart. I started choking up. I got lower in my stance and just tried to put the ball in play. Little by little, I developed the two-strike approach. And you remember the epic at-bat against Cleveland in last year's ALCS.
It was amazing.
Yeah, Tanny cut it up for us.
Two men aboard. 2-2 game.
This is where Soto sometimes does his best work.
Gattis deals a 1-2. Soto fouls it away. Soto just stalking Gattis right now. After these foul balls, just shaking his head.
He likes the competition. The acknowledgement is the competition.
He did it at 19 to Justin Verlander in the World Series.
Right. Remember it well. Four consecutive foul balls. This will be pitch number 7. The count is still 1-2. Gattis deals. Soto, a high fly ball to center. Thomas backing up. Thomas at the track. And Juan Soto! A 3-run home run! Soto magic in game 5!
So, I mean, that's legendary stuff, as you remember. He, with two strikes, changes a lot. And this article details the whole thing. His front foot, which is tilted back in on the first, before he gets to two strikes, much like Matt Shaw, he then opens it up and evens it out. He widens his stance to get the base lower, and he doesn't do a leg kick. Again, much like Matt Shaw, he's got a bit of a leg kick. Not as big as Shaw's. I know how much Shaw's concerns
you. I hate Matt Shaw's
leg kick. I know you do. But
he is so susceptible to high and inside fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
He can't get the mechanism working fast enough to get to that. And it scares me when I watch him hit.
I completely understand where you're coming from. But Soto shows what the development can be for a guy who has the leg kick and what it can be changed to with two strikes. And this article is awesome, and you should check it out. But it made me think about...
Where is it from again?
MLB.com. And how Juan Soto developed his two-strike batting stance.
All right.
It's just such incredible stuff. But Shaw is a big-time concern so far. The numbers are bad, but Carter Hawkins has some confidence in it. And Ron Coomer was talking about the approach this morning with Mully and Hall. I think Coomer shares your concern, Lawrence, about the leg kick and about the tilt-in, and had an awesome story this morning when talking about Matt Shaw.
I was always a pretty quiet, pretty balanced hitter.
Yeah.
Never did a lot. I tried one off season with Carlton Fisk. I remember we were hitting together, and I thought incorporating a leg kick would give me a lot more power, which it does. There's no doubt. It's that momentum thing, and you know, and your hands moving and your front leg coming up and down gives you a little more thump, but I just couldn't get it timing-wise. I could do it in batting practice, but I could not do it in the game, and I just scrapped it right away. I just was like, yeah, you know, this isn't worth, you know, it's just not worth it, and I scrapped it. It's just, he's got a couple things going that he's going to have to figure out how they fit into his approach at the plate. I think more of an issue than the leg kick, you know, that pigeon toeing thing, it looks weird, but don't confuse. That's not a big deal.
Okay.
It really isn't. It's the movement to me that I'm watching now of his head, Mike. When you watch his head moving forward, and he gets that, we call it as in a cage, you're getting a top half lead. That means your head's moving forward in front of you, and well, you can't hit that way. And he's getting a lot of head movement right now, trying to get his body moving, going towards the baseball. And if you're doing it with your head and not with your lower body, you're going to be in trouble. And that's where he's finding he's having some issues. They're beating him inside, and then he's out in front of the breaking ball because he's got too much movement at times with his eyes and his head.
God, Coomer is so good talking hitting, and he's damn good talking pitching as well. But yeah, don't worry about the pigeon toe thing. I don't worry as much as you about the leg kick, but the head movement thing, that gave me a start when I heard that this morning.
But I think a lot of it is connected. I think there is some cheating that he might be doing with his head because he's trying to get his body through the zone when he's hitting. And that leg kick, there's also like an issue of actual balance as you're coming set on that thing if you go too high. And the expectation is swing the bat. Like that's why Craig Counsell was talking about no one would ever teach you to hit that way because there's so many things wrong with it. And then you get to the concept of like plate coverage with it. That's before we even talk about pitch selection. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of things that are moving. And because of it, it makes it that much easier for things to fall apart quickly. And trying to rebuild that is damn near impossible inside of a season.
Yeah, and I don't think they've started to try and
I don't
rebuild
either.
It.
They're letting him do what he needs to do.
They're letting him do what he needs to do, and they're trusting his athleticism and his athletic ability and his ability to adjust, and I think it's going to evolve. I'm really interested to pay close attention to him with two strikes now. I'm really interested to see how much he's changing because if he does change a lot with two strikes, then maybe he'll go to that kind of thing. Like, does he have a full-on B approach? We used to talk about the B hack.
It takes young hitters a long time to figure that out, unless you're Juan Soto.
Unless you're Juan Soto. Or Anthony Rizzo had a B hack, and Madden used to talk about it all the time. But the Soto article reinforces it's more than just the hack. Like the stuff in the Soto piece about how wide he gets and how the feet straighten out and how the mindset changes and he sprays the ball still all over the yard with that approach. It's pretty remarkable how much needs to change. I'm going to pay a lot more attention to Matt Shaw with two strikes and see if he's capable of the kind of change we're talking about.
Let me give you another thing to watch with Shaw. It's one of the things that I'm watching. When pitchers go high and inside, what's the frequency of them then challenging him away after that? Because I think it's a perfect, if I were calling a game.
Yeah, good sequence to go at.
I'd be messing with him.
Bust him inside and try to, yeah. I mean, I'm sure
I'd be messing with him.
He's probably had it his whole life.
And he's had enough, he's probably had enough bat speed to be able to clear that problem in most places.
But this is the big leagues.
But this is the major leagues.
And the subtle difference in speed and control can really make it more impossible.
And look, there's enough pop in his bat where if he gets it, where I think that's why I love what Soto's doing, because he doesn't give anything away. A lot of, like Rizzo, even Rizzo is giving something away.
Absolutely. We watched Bellinger with a B hack and a two strike approach give something away. And I celebrate it when they do.
As you should. But, and that's guys that are understanding like their limitations and going, all right, I'm not going to take the biggest swing that I can because I just need to keep the line moving. I want to just foul off more pitches. I want my teammates to see more pitches from whoever this pitcher is. But I understand that I am choking up on the bat. I am giving away pop. I'm just trying to make contact.
And that's why Soto's such a freak, because
it doesn't matter.
He doesn't lose strength when he does this.
That ball that he hit, I was actually in Louisville watching that game, and I jumped off the couch of the Airbnb because it was such a gorgeous at bat. It's the thing that you love about baseball. I'm not afraid of this moment. I will make the adjustment. And the pitcher's like, I'm going to make the adjustment too. And they're going back and forth and back and forth. Yep. And then you just go, that's too good. He's too good. And you hate to have to tip your cap in that situation. But if you're the pitcher, you're like, I did all my things. I did them. And when I did them, he kept fouling them off. And then I did the one thing. And he hit it out the yard.
This is one of those nights that if you're a Cub fan and you've missed the Cubs because they played an afternoon game on Wednesday and no game yesterday.
And it's late tonight.
It's late tonight, man. It's 9:10.
I don't like this, Speaks. I don't like that the Cubs have had to go to the West Coast twice in the first 3 weeks of the season. That doesn't seem particularly fair. Especially after sending them to Japan to start things off.
But Mick Cronin says it's fine when people go to L.A. It's making the L.A. teams go east. That's
the problem. Getting the sunshine is totally makes up for all the time that you're spending on a plane.
What a bag.
I hate that guy.
I know you do.
I really, really hate that guy. I also don't think it's great for baseball that the Cubs and Dodgers are going to be done.
By the end of this month, Cubs-Dodgers will be done.
Because to me, these are two of the more interesting teams in the National League. And for them to play all of their games in the first month of the season, just as a fan, I feel a little robbed by it.
I get it. I totally get it. Because you look forward to that team coming in. Yeah, you absolutely look forward to that team coming in and Cubs going out there and getting the big standard. But I think part of it is the price that you had to pay for Tokyo, and part of it is you just got burned by the schedule anomaly for this particular year.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone's doing anything nefarious. I just wish that there's a part of me that's like, man, could you imagine us in August talking about the Cubs going out to go play the Dodgers?
Especially if the Cubs are showing themselves to be an offense like they are now.
Right.
And they've hit August with some fun and some momentum.
And you're saying, okay, maybe this gives us a window. It's too early to make too many pronouncements about what a team is or even what a player is. But that's the type of thing where I'm like, could you imagine, like, Cubs-Dodgers in the middle of August and they're playing that game and out there. That seems more fun to me.
My friend, the bad gambler, it hit me up. Cubs are even money to win the division right now. Even money to win the division.
I mean,
I advised him on a yes. at this point, having watched this division so far.
Wish you could have got him at plus money ago.
For sure.
And definitely after the two games in Japan where people, like, panicked.
For sure. So, but he's trying to get in now. I already had told him to hit the over. What was the over? Like 87.5, something like that?
Yeah, I think that Joe Ostrowski said today that number is now, I think, 89.5 or 90.5.
Yeah.
So you missed your opportunity to buy low on the Cubs, I think.
But Milwaukee's the only team that really concerns me at this point. Cincinnati's offense is nowhere. You know, they've picked it up a little bit.
Cincinnati's offense is nowhere. Pittsburgh's not trying. And St. Louis has just – they have lost the plot down there. And it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of people.
It's true, man. All those years when they would create players – that, like, Jeremy Hazelbaker is here, ladies and gentlemen. Here's Tommy Pham from nowhere. Like, some of
Karate
these guys
man.
Showed up from nowhere. And you're like, these guys don't exist. The Cardinals just invent players that are good, at least for, you know, three-week stints or whatever. Not anymore. Not anymore.
Those days are dead.
Yeah, they are.
And now they got to figure it out. Wasn't last year like the first year that they finished below 500 in the millennium? Like they have not been on the struggle bus too hard until now. Take advantage of the fact that they're not going to be a player in this thing for a while, which is good. When we come back, I want to have some Mr. David fun. There is Mr. David Fun out there for us.
Apparently, he's got a complicated relationship with Benny the Bull. We need to explore
this. A full-on feud. We'll discuss next on The Score.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday early access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can choose the TV you want with DirecTV.
So now they can pick out their favorite entertainment when they sign up and save money?
You mean if you like sports,
you can get a sports pack.
What about entertainment?
Entertainment pack.
It's like finding an old pizza with your favorite toppings. Which for me would be pineapple and toenails.
Pineapple?
Pay for the TV you want, not the TV you don't. Genre pack starting at $34.99 a month. Visit DirecTV.com for more information. New residential customers only. Local channels vary by market. Services renew monthly unless you cancel online. Credit card required. Restrictions apply.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, You can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Beagle and Holmes.
I might swerve in that corner.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Okay.
See, we're in full service, 670 The Score station.
Afternoons on The Score.
Ball State University, the home of David Haw.
Ah, Mr. David. We will get to him in a second. By the way, tickets are on sale now for a potential Bulls home postseason game. I don't think we can call it postseason. I think we have to call it play-in.
Postseason games in the play-in tournament and round one of the NBA playoffs. I think if we make it a plural,
okay,
then it can work. Because you got at least one in the play-in tournament. Then if they get through and they get the round one, then you get some home games then.
No, but I'm just saying that, like, you can't call it postseason because the stats don't live.
Listen, Lawrence, I'm going to tell you where to go, okay? Go to bulls.com/postseason for all things Bulls postseason.
Okay.
Including info on tickets, watch parties, and more.
All right, that helps me.
Dates and times of games will be confirmed by the NBA.
The eighth seed is still possible. Not likely, but still possible.
Good day, sir.
Speaking of the Bulls and Benny the Bull, did you know that David Haw has a feud with Benny the Bull?
I did not.
And enjoys popcorn?
I don't know any of this.
Hit it, Tanny.
I as long as we're just running through it, how about I'm dressed like Benny the Bull, and I'm pouring popcorn over Mr. David, who has this look on his face.
I would do that just to get you dressed like Benny the Bull.
Benny the Bull came to a broadcast of ours, wore his
cop
hair.
Cop on the roof,
remember?
Right?
Yes, and I had his hair on for one segment.
I behaved. That segment. I behaved that remote.
I behaved. David with the
I was a pro.
Every time Benny the Bull turned around, David gave him a dirty look.
I was a pro.
Did he do something to you or something?
He poured popcorn
on him. A whole bunch of popcorn, and ever since then, you now despise Benny the Bull?
He was on deadline. You have no idea.
Despise is too strong. Just a little friction there. Little friction.
Just a rivalry.
Yeah. That was a previous Benny the Bull, though. I shouldn't hold it against this one. We have since made up with the previous
mascot person.
Like,
aren't there three?
He's got to be. Benny the Bull's got to be in the mascot Hall of Fame, right?
Probably.
Wasn't that in Indiana?
Yeah.
It used to be. It's coming back, I think.
Oh, it closed?
It's closed?
I do think it is. It did close.
There's like a show that goes on the road.
If you are that interested in the mascot Hall of Fame, I do know some people involved in promoting that. If we could have like a guest, if we wanted to, and
you want to add one more this morning?
Yeah, could we please?
I think we have one hole left.
Please, okay.
Oh, actually, no. Hold off. The midday show needs one more guest.
Okay. Wow. No. How do we get up on this? So, happy Friday.
What was that?
Talk about a glass house. Talk about how many guests the show has. My God.
Turned down for what?
I mean, here's the thing. If it was a previous Benny the Bull, you can't hold the current Benny the Bull accountable for such things. I mean, you've got to separate. Don't judge the book by its cover. Don't judge the mascot by the suit. The human matters. And you're on the inside, Mr. David. You could go and find out if it's the same human or not at this point.
I also just think that you should probably let that go. Like, it's a fun bit. We all love it. When Benny the Bull does they bring little John and he turned down for what?
Hey, man. It's good.
It's great.
You're a man who's... I've seen you let people off your grudge list. I've seen you do that. So you advising David to do that, it's like you're coming from a healthy place.
I'm trying to. That's just fun. Like, it works for the mascot because you get someone who is fairly serious like myself or David Haw.
Yeah.
And then you put them in a situation where you're dumping popcorn on them.
It should
loosen us up.
Does Mr. David understand that he doesn't have many options to come in for an interview for the Mascot Hall of Fame? You got the Fighting Irish Leprechaun.
Yeah, but what's he going to say?
Let's go. Top of the morning. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. I don't...
Yeah, who else
talks?
I don't know. It reminds me of the time that I spoke to the Burger King at Super Bowl Media Week. And he was not very chatty. His agent was Drew Rosenhaus. He did a lot of the talking.
Very chatty.
Yeah, very, very chatty. No, but you got to be careful. You can't book somebody for the Mascot Hall of Fame.
Was the Burger King just doing sit-ups off to the side, working out?
Yes, he was.
With in that the driveway?
Big, with that big creepy-ass grin on his face.
In the driveway?
Didn't feel good, man.
It seemed like a very uncomfortable situation.
I was creeped out by the Burger King.
Thanks, everyone, here in Lindenhurst.
This was awesome.
Yeah, this is really nice to get out here with people and see them. Thank you guys so much for being a great audience.
Yeah, and I give it up for Billy and John at Lynx Golf, man. This place is killing. And I'm glad everybody enjoyed the beverage. I recommend the slot machines.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, Speaks won, I think, $200.
That's right. Thank you very much. And then I bought a round for everybody.
So he doesn't even have that money
anymore.
I
don't have it left, Mr. Taxman. Because when the Taxman cometh.
And he's cometh the next week.
Oh, my God, he is.
Yeah.
Danger.
On Jackie Robinson Day.
It's not right. Yeah, leave that man's day alone.
It's really not. But that's another story for another time. Thanks to everyone here. This was really, really great. Thanks to Tanny and Shane for all of their hard work and busting their humps to get this show together today.
Thanks to Dylan and Riley for doing a great job in promotions. We appreciate you.
We got to send Dylan to the hospital. He knocked his head against the wall.
Oh, dude,
looking at his Scotty Scheffler shot.
Oh, my God. That's danger.
And almost knocked himself out.
And Alex Kuhn, Mr. David's MVP.
Alex Kuhn. And here, Connor O'Donnell doing great job on the video, the work as always. It's great to have Connor out. And how about Bill Tennant?
Yeah, I love Bill.
I mean, we have
a big fan of Bill.
Wow.
That's one of the greats. That's one of the greats.
Yeah.
Out here.
He's normally home 4 hours ago.
Yeah, he doesn't get out the house. And now we brought him out the house and said, hey, there's going to be a lot of screaming people at this golf thing. Can you make sure it sounds good? And he's like, all right, I'll do my best. And he did, and it sounded great. Thanks to everyone who listens to the show. We appreciate you, too. For all of us here at the Spiegel and Holmes Show, thank you so much for the love and support you show us. We will try to repay the favor on Monday at 2 o'clock here on The Score.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.